Claire's Anatomy, I am your host, Charlie DeClean. I'm a physical therapist at Bell & Health Tettletown Sports Medicine and Orthopedics, a stone's throw away from iconic Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. On today's episode, we have a very special interview with Olympian biathlete Deidre Irwin. Deidre is competing at the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing as we speak, and she was kind enough to give us some of her time for an interview between some of her events. So at the time we are taping this, she has finished seventh in the individual 15-kilometer biathlon and recently now has finished 37th in the sprint biathlon. And with those finishes, she is qualified for the mass start at the end of this week. So very exciting for her. And this means a little bit more to us, seeing as she grew up about 10 minutes from here in Pulaski, Wisconsin. So definitely a homegrown talent, which makes it a little bit more fun and personal for the people of Green Bay, Wisconsin. So stretch out, warm up, and get ready. This is Players Anatomy. First up is news of the day. We had the Super Bowl last night, a couple injuries in that, but we really don't know much about them yet. So I thought actually it might be interesting to hit a couple topics that are going to come up in the interview with Deidre, and that is the idea of fast twitch and slow twitch muscles, and then this topic of VO2 max. So to give you an idea, let's start with the fast twitch and slow twitch. Every muscle is made up of a couple different types of fibers. And to make it just simple today, we're just going to simply talk about just fast twitch and slow twitch. When you look at the different characteristics of each, one of the main things is to understand first is you're really, for the most part, born with a certain ratio of slow and fast twitch. Training does tend to develop one more than the other, different types of training, whether it be endurance or speed and agility and speed and power cup training. But for the most part, you can't change your anatomy a ton. You kind of have to play the cards you're dealt. So slow twitch muscles tend to work a little bit. You use them slower. They use an even amount of energy, but they're really meant to be more long-lasting. They have way more blood vessels, and they do a lot, again, because they need even more oxygen to be used for longer periods of time. So think of slow twitch. It tends to be more for the endurance athlete. Then the fast twitch tends to activate much faster, quick sudden bursts, use a lot of energy very quickly, but also fatigues out quicker. So my best example is if you look at somebody who is a very explosive athlete, okay? So, you know, for basketball right now, let's say LeBron James. My guess is LeBron is, if you would look at a cross-section of his muscles, he would have way more fast-twitch muscles than he does slow-twitch. And for the most part, this is the way he was born. Whereas Deidre is an endurance athlete. She is cross-country skiing for hours. You know, you look at our marathoners, you look at anybody that's doing any endurance sport, our cyclists. If you do a cross-section of their muscles, you're going to see more slow twitch, especially the ones that are winning these competitions, people that are at the highest level in these sports. So when we talked about this during it, yes, there's things that Deidre has done to further develop her anatomy and make her a better athlete. But also, part of this is the way she was born. And this is what's always in my world so interesting of looking at athletes of, are you able to maximize what you have? You know, are you able to get the best hand of the cards you were dealt, is the way I like looking at it. It's always been fascinating to me. I always joke that I'm a professional people watcher in my job, but you know, a lot of it is, it's so interesting to me, the people that find a way to capitalize on their God-given talents, of people that maybe don't understand the anatomy of it, but they figure it out anyways. And Deidre really is that. Now, Deidre has a medical degree now from Michigan Tech, but she knew this long before that she was good at endurance sports. You know, she started with cross country running, then that turned into track, and then last really was the Nordic skiing and now the biathlon. So just so interesting to me of when people kind of really kind of just slowly figure it out what they're good at. And that really comes from trying a whole bunch of things. And this is again why not forcing yourself down one route as an athlete and really exposing yourself to a multitude of things can be so beneficial. The other thing we talked about, though, was VO2 max. And the best way to explain this is it's really about maximal oxygen consumption. So really what it is, it's a test that really is measuring how much oxygen do you use with every breath. So you breathe in and you're taking in oxygen into your lungs, but then you're immediately exhaling and you're not using all of that oxygen. Some of that oxygen gets wasted. If you test higher or have a higher score on your VO2 max, you are more efficient with the oxygen that you take in from the environment. So when your number is higher, say in the 60s or low 70s, you're very, very efficient that every breath you're using a higher percentage of oxygen and not wasting as much in exhaling. And therefore, have more to use for your muscles and different things. This came up again because cross-country skiers or Nordic skiers tend to be extremely high on the VO2 max scores. And I know she didn't mention her score, but it definitely sounds in the way that she told the story that her coaches were very shocked by how high her score was. I think she said she was like 17 or something like that when she had it done. And again, the fact that she's at the Olympics and finishing in a top 10 in an event, an endurance event, that makes sense to me. So she is this rare combination of an athlete who has probably a much higher ratio of slow twitch to fast twitch muscle fibers and an incredibly high VO2 max mixed with an incredible drive. She is so driven. She is so self-motivated, and that makes for something special. You know, and you can say this in every sport. You look at, you know, Ledecky and Michael Phelps in the world of swimming. They are both have such an interesting combination of all these things as well. And again, every single sport you can keep going this through of look at the best of the best of the best, or, you know, the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And it's always amazing to me at a cellular, a physiological level that these are the things that when I'm looking at athletes, and I know this makes me sound like a total science nerd, but these are the things I'm looking at. You know, football last night, VO2 max isn't nearly as big of a deal, but fast twitch muscles are, and be extremely driven is, right? And so those things are always just so, so interesting to me of kind of the physiological makeup of an athlete that makes for something great when all the stars align. And with our interview today with Deidre, that absolutely is someone who where the stars have truly all aligned. So I really, really do hope you enjoy this interview that we had with her. She was fantastic to talk with. And again, so to give you a little background on Deidre, she is currently competing at the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics. She placed seventh in the individual 15-kilometer race. Again, for those of you that are not familiar with the biathlon, you Nordic or cross-country ski over various terrain. It's not flat. There's uphill, there's downhill. And then you stop at checkpoints and have to shoot at targets. For every miss, you take a lap or incur a timing penalty that adds on to your score that makes you finish with a higher time. And then she also recently finished literally about 24 hours ago, 37th in the sprint. And with the combination of those two things, she has actually now qualified for a fifth event. She will now be also in the mass start, which is a really, really, really big deal. And if you follow her on social media, we'll put her social media handles in the description of today. You can see how excited she is, how big of a deal it is. She is truly at the peak of her athletic ability right now, and she is doing an amazing job of capitalizing that. So a little background on Deidre for the interview here. She grew up in Pulaski, Wisconsin, which is 10 minutes away from where we are recording. She then went to Michigan Tech and studied exercise science. She has a bachelor's of science degree in that. Really focused a little bit more on, as she went along, on coaching and her athletic career. And then just recently, within the last couple of years, joined the Vermont Army National Guard. And really has been, it's been a really unique thing of now serving our country, which also gives her the ability to use that as a training piece for her athletic interests as well. So she's been competing. She mentions this in the interview, but she was at the 2018 trials. She only had been doing the biathlon for about 3 or 4 months prior to the 2018 Olympics and almost qualified, which is just incredible. That just speaks to what kind of athlete she is. But that was at the 2018, and then she's really been competing on a international level ever since then, with finishes 51st in the sprint, 45th in the pursuit, 13th in a relay. So she is starting to really make a name for herself on the world stage, and finishing at a top 10 here at Beijing just speaks to that as well. A little heads up for the interview. We are 14 hours apart when we are doing this. So this is the first time that I actually recorded audio remotely over WebEx or Zoom, similar Zoom piece here. So please keep in mind, my audio is a little bit fuzzy. Hers is actually pretty crystal clear, but also keep in mind too, there's going to be a little bit of lag just from the standpoint of we're doing this remotely. So just please put up with that. But it's totally worth it. Her interview is fantastic. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Here is Olympian Deidre Irwin.
So Deidre, thanks for joining us. So give our listeners a little background. Where did you grow up? Where are you from?
I'm from Pulaski, Wisconsin. I grew up a runner at Pulaski High School, started skiing for Ashwaubenon Nordic Ski Team when I was 16, about a sophomore in high school. From there, I went to Michigan Tech as a three-sport athlete. I got recruited for running, but they let me walk onto the ski team, thankfully. And then after that, I joined a professional ski team out in Sun Valley, Idaho, and my path kind of just kept leading me a different way. And in 2017, I went to a talent ID camp in Lake Placid, New York, with U.S. Biathlon Association. And it's the rest is history. I fell in love with biathlon right away, and now I'm at the 2022 Olympics representing the U.S. biathlon team.
Crazy. You have such a unique story, but just to back up a little bit, so when in high school or maybe even college did you realize that maybe this is something that has a little bit more of a future? I mean, I know you got an exercise science background, so you've always loved the world of exercise and being active. I already know that, but more of when did you start to realize maybe on the college level, not so much running, but really on the Nordic cross country side, like I'm actually kind of good at this. When did you start to realize that?
Oh man. You know, I really enjoyed it, and I started making some big strides in college as a skier. And the more and more I tried to bounce between the two, running and skiing, I kept getting these weird running injuries that just kept pushing me kind of towards the more skiing side, the lower impact. And I just kind of kept getting better and better at it. And in 2015, or the summer of 2014, before my final year of college, I actually was ready to retire. I moved out to Sun Valley. I was coaching. I was really falling in love with that aspect of my path as more of a coach than an athlete. But I got back to college, and something about that summer in Sun Valley of coaching other people, like, really boosted my own athleticism. And I learned so much about my own technique and everything like that. And I had a breakout season my final year of college, and I qualified for the U23 World Championships as a Nordic skier. And that really opened my eyes to the fact that maybe I could do this professionally. I mean, why not? I could, you know, I made it to this international stage. Why not give it a try instead of, you know, hanging up my skis right after college? So I took a leap of faith, and I moved back out to Sun Valley, Idaho, not as a coach this time, but as an athlete. And that's when it really just started clicking for me. I started really working more on my technique and more on all the little things that go into Nordic skiing instead of just the broad, I guess, just exercise part of it.
So when you had, so obviously, and man, it's still always amazing to me how you really have had such a quick rise to how quickly you got good at it. Because now, I was trying to explain to my kids, obviously, biathlon is not a normal sport. You know, the idea of, like, is she carrying a gun on her back? You know, the idea of, like, I thought this was just cross-country skiing. So, and try to explain the background of, you know, it came out of, I believe, like a military training thing over in, whether it be Norway or one of the Scandinavian countries. And so the idea of, that's just what they do when they're young. That's just what you do when you grow up. So there's so much more where it's just like a part of their lifestyle, how much they do it even when they're young. You were a and according to your sport, very late to the sport, right? But even athletically, though, when did you start noticing, because, you know, to think of your exercise science degree a little bit, two of the things that I think the average person sometimes has an hard time understanding is the idea of fast twitch and slow twitch muscles and why that matters and what type of athlete that affects and helps. And then the idea of what your true aerobic capacity is. And when did you start to figure out, though, with your background, especially of that you might actually be the most ideal combination of you're probably more slow twitch than fast twitch, and you probably have way above average aerobic capacity. When did you start to actually notice that?
It definitely was when I started Nordic skiing, because Nordic skiing, when I joined it, they actually had a lot of science and technology behind it. They were trying to keep up with Norway and Sweden and all those Scandinavian countries. So I actually did my first VO2 max test when I was, I think, 17 or 18 years old. So I was, you know, hooked up to the breathing machine. Yep. They just pushed me as hard as I could go on a treadmill just to see what that was like. And I got my numbers back. I can't remember what they were, but everybody was just sort of like, okay, like you have the capability. And, you know, they saw like my strength and stuff like that. I started, both my brothers were athletes growing up. And so mostly doing football and stuff like that. So I actually started learning how to power lift when I was in seventh grade, because they went to school early and I didn't want to ride the bus. So I went with them. And so I just joined like a weightlifting program. So from a very young age, I realized like, you know, how athletic I could be. You know, I was still like this awkward runner with like very little muscle. And so it wasn't until I joined skiing that I actually started putting on muscle, and I started kind of realizing more of the advantages with that. And, you know, along with that, my running just started getting better and better. And I think skiing actually really opened up my eyes to how athletic I could be. You know, I think I was a good runner and I was a very competitive runner, but I hadn't really reached my potential. And I think one of my high school coaches, he'll say over and over again, like he saw me and he just was like, he knew. He knew like my potential as I was like falling all over the ski trail. He saw the fight in me and he saw my, you know, aerobic and physical capabilities. So so I think skiing really is what, you know, opened my eyes to that sort of more science side of being an athlete and, you know, getting to that next level.
And do you think, too, though, with your running background, because I always feel it to be a really good runner and reach, because I know you've been to the state meet and then obviously earned a scholarship at Michigan Tech. Were you always comfortable being uncomfortable with, because that's really what endurance sports are, right? Like you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Did that always come easy to you, or is that something you really had to work through?
I think when I was younger, running came really naturally to me. And so in order to win the races, I didn't really ever have to get out of my comfort zone from a young age. And it wasn't until I got into like high school and, you know, I started getting to see more competitors and getting to more of these bigger events that's when I realized I'm like, oh no, there's a whole nother level. Like I have to get into this pain cave and I have to be okay with, you know, getting into that level. So yeah, I would in order to be an endurance athlete, you got to hurt. You got to really love the hurt. You got to have a high pain tolerance, a high threshold. I mean, you can see that from so many athletes, especially Jessie Diggins. I mean, she just got a bronze medal last night. She's one of the biggest fighters I know, biggest engine, and she will black out at the end of every finish if she could, you know? So I think definitely this sport, you have to be very, very okay with being, you know, in a lot of pain to get to that finish line first.
Yeah, it's, and I really think that's just all endurance sports in general. Like if you really want to get to that next level, you do have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. So we were talking a little bit offline here before we started. 18, you go to the time trials and you're close, and then you end up competing internationally that next year. From 4 years ago to now, and I know you were saying you literally had just got started with the biathlon, but you had been cross-country skiing now for several years. Even from, let's start even just from a nutrition side. What nutritionally changed for you from 18 versus like leading up to the trials in 18 to now leading up to the trials in 22? You know, our last episode of this podcast was literally Lee Herkus with sports nutrition. So this is fresh in everybody's mind, but you specifically 4 years later, what's different?
I think before I joined biathlon, I definitely had gotten caught up on a lot of, you know, you want to have that balance between, you know, being light but having muscle. And I definitely was more on the, like, I just need to work, you know, I need to just work out more, not necessarily like put on muscle. And I need to like watch what I'm eating and watch the sugar and watch, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And when I joined biathlon, it was actually a funny like aha moment for me. I went to one of my first camps and the shooting aspect was just taking so much energy, like mental energy from me, that I just was like so tired all the time. And one of my teammates was like, you know, she was just like, well, you know, your brain runs on carbs. And I'm like, well, yeah, I studied this. Of course I know my brain runs on carbs. And she's like, well, are you eating enough of them? And I'm like, I'm going to go eat a donut. Like, that was just when my like love affair with like donuts and cake came back, where I was like, for so many years, it's not like I was completely restricting myself. I just definitely was like a little too right. aware of like what I was eating. And when I joined biathlon and realized like, yeah, I'm not only just, you know, doing all of this physical energy now, I'm also adding a whole other mental energy aspect to it, that like my brain is working so much harder, especially when you first learn how to shoot and everything like that. There's just so many little details and your brain is constantly like trying to do something. So at that moment I was like, yeah, donuts, like cake, just lay it on me. Let's go. And so, yeah, a lot of people have been really surprised about my diet, because I'm pretty loose about it. But, you know, when it comes to it, I think I have a hard time eating sometimes in Europe. There's a lot of like goulashes and stuff like that that just don't really sit well with my stomach. So people kind of make fun of me because I'm eating like potato chips all the time and stuff like that, just to try to keep, you know, everything up. Because I think last year when I met, it was Lee, right?
Yep. Yep.
I met him via text, actually, because I was having such a caloric deficit in the middle of my season that like my muscles in standing position were actually shaking because I was so depleted in like my muscles and everything like that. So Nick got me in contact with him, and, you know, he introduced me to some really interesting products, and then just like, you know, really told me just like, you know, push the carbs, push all this other stuff. And that has really helped me. You know, it took me a while to dig myself out of that grave I got myself into last year. But this year I've had very little issues with that, because I think, you know, the less you think about what you're eating, you know, the more you can actually eat. Right. Sometimes. And the more you just sort of sit down, and sometimes it takes a while to get enough calories, especially, like I said, when you're on the road and everything like that. But it's, you know, just getting enough. And for me, cake, it works.
So that's a great segue. So I got a text from Lee, knowing that I was going to be interviewing you right today. It says, hey, Charlie, Nick was mentioning that you're doing a podcast with Deidre tonight. If you get a chance, ask what are the most valuable nutrition tips that she has learned during her Olympic training. Also, she is my hero for having cake as her carb load the night before. Haha. So, obviously, very happy to see you're going hard on carbs. And maybe your tip is literally, I think that's the biggest thing we see. I know we had talked a little bit of kind of some misunderstandings, especially with endurance athletes. Not enough calories is such a big one. It's such a big one. And I do think we tend to see this a little bit more on the female side than the male side. But it is all athletes in general. You have to make sure you have enough calories. No doubt about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think which is crazy for me, some of the most common questions I get when I go to camps and I'm coaching children too, they're always asking like, what do I eat? And I'm just like, food, you know, like it's so hard to hear, you know, young kids focusing so much on thinking they need to restrict certain things or eat certain things. Like I have to have like a cup of oatmeal with blueberries and peanut butter. I'm like, no, like when I was in high school, I found out that pancakes worked for me. My dad would wake up before my cross country races, and he actually worked night shift. So he'd come home from work as I was going to school or getting ready for a race or something, and he would just make me pancakes, and I would just be eating pancakes all day. I mean, I'd have them for breakfast. I'd like have them in little baggies at lunch. I just loved pancakes. And so it just, it kind of changes throughout your life. And it makes, yeah, it makes me a little sad, like hearing, you know, people think they need to eat certain things. But a lot of the stuff I try to tell now when I go to these camps to these kids is like, you just need to eat. You need to eat right. enough, and you need to be fueled. And so at any point, if you're thinking about restricting your diet, especially as an endurance athlete, you're already heading down the wrong path. You know, there's very, very rare instances that any endurance athlete needs to restrict what they're eating. You know, for me, like certain foods make me a little sick. So I need to like stay away from them before I exercise or something like that. But that's different than like, I need to watch my calories. If anybody, I've done it, has actually tried to track how many calories they consume through a day, it's never enough. It's right. never. I mean, yeah. I think there's certain points, you know, during the summer when I'm at my really, really high training loads that I'm, you know, trying to like actually put on weight and trying to do, and I can never eat enough. I'm like sitting there staring at like a bowl of pasta and I'm like, this is the right amount of calories, but like, I can't physically eat it. So it's like you said, it's crazy how many people think, you know, if you restrict your diet and if you only eat healthy, or like what is healthy, you know,
right.
calories are calories. It doesn't always matter where you get them from. So for me, you know, I wouldn't eat a donut right before I race, but you know, I'm going to eat a donut after. And like, yeah, cake the night before a race probably isn't like what most athletes will do, but I had a full 24 hours before I was racing. So like, heck yeah, I'm going to eat a bowl of cake if that's what my body's craving at the time. So, yeah. I think you're on the right idea. Like you just, as an athlete, especially as an endurance athlete, the more you train, the more you have to eat, the more you have to fuel. Yep. And you never want to get into that deficit, because once you're at that low level, once you like have already depleted your systems, it takes twice as much time and energy to get back to the point where you're going to feel good again.
Yeah. All right. How about from training standpoint then? So nutrition, obviously, really more than anything figured out, just not nearly enough. But then as you went to training, and I know this is where we've had, where our kind of our crew has been on your path, and we kind of crossed paths of helping you during some of your training, but you had such a unique opportunity with the Army that you didn't have before 18. So, you know, tell us a little bit about that, because I don't think the average person really knows that. You know, I know one of my best friends from college was born in Norway, and he talked about how, you know, to almost to graduate high school, he had to go into the military for Norway for 1 year. Mm-hmm. It's like a point system, and he did that, and he was telling me all the things, and he did this. He trained like you did as part of the military. So this was such mm-hmm. a unique opportunity, seeing as going to 18, you're doing some coaching, you're trying to work, you're trying to get some sponsorship, all at the same time trying to train. And the Army really had such a unique opportunity for you to kind of put that all together. So how did that even come about? How did you even find out about that?
Yeah, there were a couple of National Guard biathlon athletes on the national team. So I trained with them in Lake Placid, New York. And the more I got to know them and kind of see what the program was like, the more it just made sense for me. They were able to come to training. They didn't have to worry about getting sponsors and do these fundraisers. Like I was constantly trying to do like GoFundMes. I was coaching camps. I was trying to get, you know, like you said, sponsors and stuff like that to try and help pay for all these expenses that I had, all while I also had rent and food and student loans to pay for. So the Army kind of opened up that path for me to be able to, you know, train full time and get paid and not have to, you know, do all that extra stuff on the side that was taking so much of my energy. So it was hard going to basic training at the age of 26, 27, I will say that. But after those 4 months were over, I learned so much about myself, my own resiliency. And it's just been amazing ever since. You know, the world-class training facility that we have in Jericho, Vermont is just amazing. The amount of resources now that I'm able to afford and get in contact with is awesome. Like being able to, you know, fly home to Green Bay and work with Bell and Sports Medicine has been just so awesome. I mean, I nerd out every time I go there. You guys have such the coolest tools. Seriously, like exercise science nerds, like heaven there. It's just been such a unique and amazing opportunity that, you know, joining the Army has been able to give me to just be able to elevate my career and be able to just really focus on my goals.
Yeah, it's just such a neat opportunity for you to truly put it all together. And I have to imagine that's a piece of of why you're meeting goals that you didn't know you were capable of literally right now. You know, again, you've always been willing to work hard. That's not different. You know, you've always been willing to be comfortable being uncomfortable. What was it about this race though? So, I mean, obviously you shot amazing, right? You only had one miss, I believe, if I saw my stats right. But did it, you know, you'll hear athletes talk about just like, I just hit a second or third wind. I was in a zone and I was able to push harder than ever was before. What was it? What happened and what was different in this race?
Nothing. That's what's so crazy. That's what's so crazy about this sport. I didn't approach this race any differently than I have in any other race. And I didn't think I was performing any better than I ever have, besides on the range. Obviously on the range, you can tell if you're performing better. Yeah. You know, every hit I got, I was like, this is awesome. Cleaning the first three stages was amazing. But like out on the course, honestly, I started and I didn't really feel that great. I was kind of felt heavy. I mean, I think the travel to Beijing and, you know, we're at altitude, the snow is really abrasive and slow. It's cold. I didn't really realize I was actually skiing that well until the race was over. So I think, you know, you work so hard for these moments and I think I didn't feel great like physically out there, but my level has gotten so much higher in the past couple years that, like you said, you just kind of push that boundary of what actually feels comfortable. And for me, I was uncomfortable the whole time and didn't even realize I was skiing faster than I have in the past. But you know, I'm comfortable with that level of uncomfort now. That's the right word.
Yeah, no, it is. It's been so much fun watching. I know your time's not done there yet. You still have three races left. Is that right? Three left?
Three to four. Yeah.
Three to maybe even four.
Three to four.
So what events do you still have left?
So we have the sprint on Friday. And if I get in the top 60, then I qualify for the pursuit. So that's on Sunday. And then I can't remember if it's the relay next or the mass start. But for sure I'm doing the relay. It's, you know, 4x4 women. And then I am currently on the provisional start list for the mass start, which is just crazy. I've never done a mass start before, but because of how high I placed in the individual, I am currently ranked in the top 30 right now. So you need to be ranked in the top 30 in order to do that race. And I'm hoping to hold on to that spot. It would be a really cool experience. So I will be doing either 3 to 4 races, before the end of the, Olympics now here.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, appreciate your time. I know this is, we are 14 hours difference here. So on audio, it doesn't matter, but I'm about to get ready for bed. You're just getting your day started. It's crazy how this all works. Everyone here is pulling so hard for you. We're so excited for you. Obviously, selfishly, it's fun for our team to feel, you know, that we've been a part of your journey, which has been so fun for us. So really, really appreciate your time, Deidre. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, you guys have been such a huge part of my journey. And honestly, you know, one of those tipping points that have helped me really propel my career. So always super fun to talk with you guys. And I can't wait to come home and keep working. We got another 4 years in us, I think. So.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Deidre Irwin. I really appreciate her giving us her time. Again, we are 14 hours apart, so that was a lot of fun for us. It was late at night for me, early in the morning for her, and she couldn't have been more kind and generous with her time. I included several links for Deidre in today's description. Team USA has a really cool page on her that they are updating right away as she finishes events, but it also gives you a little history of how well she's done over the years, all the things she's involved in, and a little bit more of a get-to-know page. And then also I included all of her social media handles. She's a really fun follow on social media because she competes all over the world and does a great job of posting pictures along the way. Well, we are nearing the end of today's episode of Players Anatomy. I want to thank you again for listening. Please smash that subscribe button if you like what you hear. Tell a friend. We continue to try to grow our listening. And to keep up with anything that's happening at Bell & Health Titletown, please look at any social media platform and search at Bell & Health Titletown, and you will find us there. And finally, let's take a minute for Charlie's Cut. We have the Olympics going on right now, and we are getting yet another reminder. We just did this a year ago and talked about this with Simone Biles, but, and I hope I'm saying her name right, Michaela Schifrin, one of the downhill skiers, incredibly talented, again, gets her name thrown in the best of all time, the greatest of all time, the GOAT kind of conversation, and has had a major life event over the last couple of years, struggled in the first couple events, and it's been so nice to finally see the majority of people on social media just giving her some love. I hope you're not one of the people that is throwing comments out there of like, oh, another disappointment for her. We see most of these athletes every 4 years only, and for a lot of them, only once, never again. Michaela's at her, I believe this is her third Olympics, if I'm saying that right, which is absolutely incredible. And it just shows you it is the mental and physical battle these sports are. Downhill skiing to me is one of the craziest of all of them, of the speeds they get to, the true risk of danger that exists and pushing the limits. So just please be part of the camp that is just showing her some love. And when she doesn't get the finish you thought or that was said she was going to be or predicted, don't just come down hard on her and just be there to support and just show her nothing but love. And really, hopefully we take this as a, it seems like a lot of people have learned from the Simone Biles and are showing a little bit more love with this, but we still have a lot of negativity out of the internet. Please be more part of positivity. Well, thank you again for listening. I'm Charlie Clean, and we'll see you next time on Players Anatomy.